If you're confused about weight loss programs, you're not alone. At any given moment, popular diets run the gamut, from low-fat, high-carb to high-fat, low-carb. Some emphasize high protein, others require precise combinations of nutrients in each meal. In my medical practice, I found that a good understanding of the thinking behind a therapy leads to high compliance. With that in mind, I'll try to give you a basic grasp of the principles behind the South Beach diet. First, a brief history of dieting to bring you up to speed. The modern era of better health through weight loss begins with the American Heart Association diet recommendations that grew out of post-World War II studies done by a pioneering researcher, Dr. Ansel Keys of the University of Minnesota. He compared cholesterol and heart attack rates in countries around the world and found that where there was low intake of fat, people enjoyed better cardiovascular health. This was for the most part true, and it furthered our understanding of how food affects our health. But it was not entirely true, and it has taken many years to complete our knowledge of how nutrition and health, especially cardiac health, are connected. When Dr. Keys performed his studies of the relationship between high fat and heart disease, he found an exception on the Greek island of Crete, where there was high intake of fat, yet very low heart attack rates and cancer rates. It ran counter to everything else his studies indicated, and so the Crete exception was ignored. This turned out to be unfortunate. It was largely on the basis of Dr. Keys' findings and other similar studies that national recommendations to lower total fat intake were determined. It was decided at the time not to perform a multi-million-dollar study that would test the effects of a low-fat diet. Instead, the guidelines were set on the basis of the best evidence available. To be fair, it is difficult to measure the long-term effects of a diet on the cardiovascular system. Arteriosclerosis buildup in the blood vessel walls takes a lifetime before it is serious enough to cause a heart attack or stroke. Thus, the ideal diet study would have taken many years to complete, during which the cost of monitoring so many participants would have been prohibitive. There was also a political component to the low-fat guidelines, a kind of nutritional correctness, not unlike the political correctness of recent years. The role that a Senate committee chaired by George McGovern played in the writing of our national dietary guidelines was brilliantly documented by journalist Gary Taubes in the journal Science in March of 2001. The McGovern committee's original mandate was to fight malnutrition, but in the 1970s, it changed to the goal of the prevention of overnutrition. The campaign started with a preconceived notion. Fat was inherently bad, and our overindulgence in it was the major cause of obesity and heart disease in the United States. The committee also tended to suspect that those who did not believe fat was public enemy number one were being unduly influenced by the beef and egg or dairy industry. The bottom line is that low-fat, high-carb became the orthodoxy, despite the lack of proof that such a diet would improve overall health. How has America done since the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet recommendations? We've gotten fatter and fatter. In addition, adult-onset diabetes, a sure sign of unhealthy blood chemistry, has become more widespread, really epidemic. What went wrong? First, it was thought that the new low-fat American heart diet would mimic the low-fat, high-carb regimen of countries like China and Japan, which had very low heart attack and stroke rates. But the U.S. food industry stepped in to provide us with low-fat foods that tasted good. It created delicious, highly processed foods, including cookies and baked goods, prominently and accurately advertised as low-fat, no cholesterol. But these are the sources of empty calories. In whole foods, the sugars and starches are bound up with fiber and nutrients. So when we eat whole grain rice, for instance, we get the entire package. Processing removes the fiber and hence the vitamins and minerals in order to make that rice easier and faster to cook. But as a result, all we get is the starch and the calories, empty of the necessary fiber and nutrients. In addition, the diet pyramid of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, was built on a base of the so-called complex carbohydrates, bread, pasta, rice, etc. Like most Americans, I took that to mean I could eat these foods in abundance and still live thin, healthy, and happily ever after. I was taught in medical school that the only bad effect of sugars was tooth decay. If you recall the 1980s, you remember how healthy bread, pasta, and rice were made to seem when compared to the supposed evils of meat. What have we learned since those days? A lot. First, the concept of dietary fiber as an important component of our nutrition was unknown at the time of Ansel Keys' studies. We didn't begin to appreciate the critical role of fiber until the 1970s. Even then, most of the attention was on fiber's effect on colon and bowel function. In 1980, Keys wrote a book summarizing his studies. In it, he suggests that fiber may have been an important variable not considered in his earlier studies. It turns out that the United States and Northern European countries with the high fat and high heart attack rates also had the lowest levels of fiber in their diets. By contrast, less developed countries with high carbohydrate, low fat diets had lots of fiber in their carbs. In the 1990s, the Harvard School of Nutrition, under the guidance of Dr. Walter Willett, looked at the correlation between fiber and heart attacks. The finding? When people eat high-fiber carbs, such as vegetables and unprocessed grains and flour, the danger of most dietary fat becomes minimal. Only saturated fat remains a predictor of heart attacks, and even then, not a very conclusive one. When the American Heart Association and other national agencies first issued their low-fat recommendations, most of the fat consumed in the United States was the unhealthy, saturated kind. Not much was known about the effects of other fats, such as olive oil, fish oils, peanut oils, etc. Because even the experts didn't fully understand the role of fat in health, the recommendations were to decrease total fat intake. In response, saturated fat intake has decreased substantially. In fact, the total cholesterol of Americans has decreased even as we've gotten fatter. Why? Because we're eating less saturated fat and more polyunsaturated fats, our total cholesterol has decreased. But while our bad cholesterol is lower, so is our good cholesterol, the kind that actually improves cardiovascular health. A third fat in our blood, triglycerides, is also higher, another ill effect of obesity. Triglycerides contribute to clogged arteries, just like cholesterol. Finally, we've learned more about the differing natures of fats and carbohydrates when it comes to putting on weight. Ounce for ounce, fats have more calories than carbs. We've always known this, but we've misunderstood the significance. We took it to mean that carbs are less fattening. In reality, the opposite is true. When we eat fats, we become satiated. As a result, we know when to stop eating. Processed carbs, due to their effect on blood sugar, stimulate further hunger, thereby encouraging overeating and obesity. Again, this was simply not known at the time when the low-fat, high-carbohydrate approach was adopted. In the late 1970s, Dr. David Jenkins of the University of Toronto introduced the concept of glycemic index. This measures the degree to which eating a particular food increases your blood sugar level and insulin level, therefore contributing to weight gain. One of the surprising findings was that certain starches such as white bread and potatoes increase blood sugar levels faster than does table sugar. The best intentions of the USDA and its diet pyramid turned out to be a diet based on sugars. It was a widespread adoption of this way of thinking that has caused the fattening of America. National guidelines that were created to make us thin and healthy actually made us fatter and sicker.